Okay. Welcome to our first episode of Diaries of a Data Scientist. My name is Yasmin.
And my name is Kate. And I guess before we're going to start dive into the details and the episode of today, I think it is better for us to introduce a little bit. So my name is Kate, as I said, and I'm a data scientist working in the BASF. I'm also a global coach, having a lot of coachings worldwide as data analysts, data engineers, developers, coach for executors at the Data and AI Academy at BASF. I'm speaking publicly, writing articles, so really great to share the experience in this podcast. Yes.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. My name is Yasmin. Like Kate, I'm also working at BASF as a data scientist. So that's how I entered the company. In the meanwhile, I've become a team lead. So now I'm in a bit more managerial position in the area of data science at BASF. Also very active with the Data and AI Academy. And I've been doing mentoring in the area of data science for over 4+ years now. Really, really enjoy that a lot. And actually, that's also the topic of our first episode today, because Kate and I thought, you know, if you really want to get serious with data science and you want to become a data scientist, we recommend you to get a mentor and to get, you know, get really a mentor in data science first. And that's what we wanted to talk to you about today. And we're going to share basically the most important things in data science mentoring.
Yes, so pretty much it is like 10 tips that we have learned through our experience and coaching experience for mentors as well as for the mentors. And pretty much we're going just to start with the 5 tips for the mentors, getting a little bit of the conversation. Maybe if we do have an example, so we'll also introduce them that have happened in our coaching sessions. And then we got smoothly into the tips, 5 tips for the mentors that maybe will guide you a little bit and you will avoid the same mistakes kind of that we have done in our past. And I would say that we can start with the first one, which is, it is about the actual time, and I would say the appreciation of having the mentors and kind of having the coach, because what I have seen kind of in my experience is that if it is for free, and we have to say, I guess, firstly, as like kind of a teaser, sort of, that a lot of coaching is done for free, even though sometimes it is not like publicly in the companies, right? And you have to pay for that. A lot of coaches are doing that voluntarily. And I think people do not really treat it the way it has to be treated sometimes. And this is one of the first aspects that I would love to talk about as a tip for a mentee to really appreciate a time with your coach. Yasmin, do you have...
What does this mean exactly for you? So I totally get the idea. Mm-hmm. So happy to also provide some examples from my side as a mentor. But how does this look like with you when a mentee really appreciates your, you know, efforts as a mentor?
I will kind of have 2 examples what I had in the past. Don't want to sound too much of complaining about that, but a little bit show how it actually might be. So the first case have happened to me when one of the mentees, he got late on our sessions and constantly. And I think it is already not something nice to have, because like pretty much if you have already agreed, right, at the right amount of time to meet, like, I don't know, like a 2 p.m. or something, then it kind of, you have to start and say the session at 2 p.m. and not waste any more times. But I've had a lot of times when coaches got repeatedly got late. And afterwards, I started having kind of the emails for every single coach that I have, that we might have totally different cultures, right? Because like we coach totally different people from Asian regions, from the United States, and they might have totally different kind of tolerance for the being late. on the sessions. And this is the first thing that I've started doing, that we have the agreement that we're going to start the coaching session at the very same time that we agreed on.
Yeah.
That is the first one.
Mm-hmm. I fully agree, right? So I mean, like, oftentimes the mentors like us, they are full-time employees as well. So, you know, mm-hmm. you're trying to schedule either the calls before work, after work, or sometimes even during lunch break. So, mm-hmm. Of course, then you really also want to be on point and start a session on point, right? And maybe that also shows a lot of, you know, then also appreciation if the person comes prepared to the session, right? So I think the seamlessly can lead over into our second aspect that we wanted to talk about today, which is in the kind of mentee-mentor relationship, the mentee wants to learn something around data science from the mentor, right? So the person wants something from the mentor. So that's why we think that also the mentee should be mainly responsible for, you know, in the end, also the success of the mentorship in terms of organizing the sessions, doing follow-ups, I don't know, coming prepared to the sessions. And mostly for me, this also really means, you know, having a concrete kind of goal in mind. Because it's really hard if you're sitting there and then basically it's share whatever around your life as a data scientist, and then you don't really know where to start, right?
Yes, definitely. Maybe I would ask you this quite a question. Like, what do you have just started doing the coaching sessions? Have you ever had this mistake that pretty much you decided to take 100% responsibility for the mentee?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I started more than 4 years ago, and, you know, to really just got into all of that mentoring, I read a lot about it, but still, like, you know, the first few sessions, when I had the feeling, you know, maybe the mentee wasn't as motivated, I always tried to find the error with me. So, you know, kind of, or maybe I didn't ask enough engaging questions, or maybe I should have given better advice. And I think it's always, you know, comes down to both of the sides and both of the parties, right? And of course, you grow in your experience as a mentor and better know how to handle it. But I think a lot really also depends on, you know, how goal-oriented and how ambitious the mentee is and how structured they are.
I'll just like ask you, because I pretty much had the same mistake in the very first, like with one of the very first mentees that I had, because I was like pretty much was getting out of, like, I decided just to take the whole responsibility. I was like, you know, organizing the meetings. I was doing everything by myself. For kind of two sessions, I was like, wait. Because like coaching is, I wouldn't say that it's like a kind of a therapy with a psychologist, but it's kind of a little bit similar towards what has to be done. Then you provide the answers, right? You're kind of responsible for the content that you created for. But the mentees, they are responsible mainly for the, well, as you said, goals, preparation, organizing the stuff. And also, as you've said like earlier, that it's a bad bit to run for mentees. Yeah, to notify them, to tell them, oh, yeah, you actually have it today. Or like, we haven't booked anything. So they have to come to you.
Definitely.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and also I think just, you know, having a kind of realistic expectations about what the mentoring can bring and what it maybe cannot bring. Mm-hmm. So, you know, also aspiring data scientists, they shouldn't come maybe with the expectation into a data science mentoring thinking that they're going to get data science tutoring, right? I think that it's something that we've come across in some of our conversations about mentoring, that sometimes we had the feeling that the expectation was, okay, I'm going to solve now all of the problems for you. And, you know, it's more like university tutoring. And I think that that's maybe not the right expectation about the usual form of mentoring and data science.
Yeah, definitely. I've also had a couple of bad situations where you have to manage the expectations in that. So people kind of think of you as a tutor and maybe even kind of on the higher positions because you kind of call yourself a coach. And it means that they will just come to you and say, okay, let's go. And pretty much instead of actually getting people from the point B to, like, from the point A to point B, you have to go through the kind of courses materials, which is not the, I would say, the best way of doing the coaching and getting people to their kind of desired point B.
Yeah, definitely. And I think also, I mean, in general, the format is different than, you know, having lectures at university, right? So usually in my mentorings, I had a couple of weeks between each session because, you also need some time on the mentee side, right, to process the recommendation, also work through some of the recommendations. And I think that is one of the common mistakes maybe can happen as a, you know, when you just start out mentoring on the mentee side, that you don't assign, say, sufficient enough time for actually doing some work in between
on
things you learned about in the mentoring. And then it can be quite frustrating for both sides if you get into the next session and you feel like, okay, there has been like no progress.
Yeah, actually, like, you're saying this right now, and I have in the back of my mind, like, all of my kind of coaches that have been actually like that from like session one, like, to session two, we had kind of 30 days period of time that they had to kind of do the assignment, do the preparation, ask questions like that. And from like on the session two, we got like to the point where they like, oh, I actually did understand this quite well. And we had to start it over and over again, going through the same material. That is pretty interesting. So pretty much, I guess, like, to summarize that, I would say that 90%-ish kind of is the coach's responsibility, and coach should not run after the coach in order to ask.
Yeah. Have you ever had the feelings in one of your like mentoring sessions that, you know, that the mentee is maybe a bit disappointed with you as a mentor, or like kind of, you know, had maybe a bit of, say, unaligned expectations of what you could deliver as a mentor to him or her?
It is a pretty cool question because I have never had it. Like, you know, I really feel that on the coaching sessions, your coachee has to kind of, you need to have a lot of emotions afterwards. You just need to let it feel you. And if after the coaching session you have the feelings of being upset, depressed, or something, disappointed, it's not a right way to go. I will put it like this. Maybe that is why I've never had it.
Still, I think you have to be quite in control also about, or like at least being, I think the reflection part after mentoring session is also quite important, right? That you just take some, I don't know, 5 minutes after each session on both sides, right? And just reflecting upon what we discuss. Maybe also there's some feedback, right, for the next sessions for both sides. I mean, you can definitely, you know, that's why we're all human. We can still improve over time, right? So also it should be the expectation now with us talking about it that every mentoring session has to be 100% perfect and aligning to these standards. But, you know, I think in the end, it's just really good to have an open conversation and also, you know, say if you maybe had a different expectation and, you know, just discuss this transparently. No, I think that maybe can lead us well over to the other side of things, right? To the mentor part, and maybe sharing some advice to this the mentor part. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, the thing that you just said, to kind of to see if the expectation has been met or not, it is a pretty nice advice to have a get to know session. Before having any kind of actual coaching sessions, have the first get to know session, like where you actually have to say, okay, we're doing this and that. Right? And you actually have to, like, kind of say to your coach, what do you want to have in the end? And if you even can deliver that. And pretty much, I don't know how is that for you, but for me, I do have a kind of a checklist. And all the time when I have a new person, I'm like, okay. And
like a mental checklist or like a physical checklist?
Not physical checklist. Pretty much what I have to say And I kind of have a kind of a presentation with every single point that I will not forget it to say, because like this is how you can set up first the
frame. Yes.
And also, for example, like one of the examples that I have, I had a coaching, I think like kind of 3 or 4 months ago, on like going back to the tutoring part. He thought that coaches is like pretty much the same as tutors. And when we had a conversation, he felt, okay, he told me something that, okay, let's do a first meeting today, and maybe the next one, like after 4 days, but like maybe we can do like two sessions per week.
Wow.
And like
that
blah,
sounds...
blah, 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 blah. I mean, I can do that, but since I'm going getting like assignments, I'm not sure that you will handle this actually. So, and that is why I have, I think, I'm not sure about that, but about kind of 6 bullet points that I have to always go through in the very first session. And if by the end of the very first get to know session, I'm not having the clear, like a clear goal, like pretty much point B.
So what does the person actually want to achieve, right? With
yes,
coaching.
Say, okay, goal, and please think a little bit about this.
Yeah, nice.
Otherwise,
we can share our checklist with our audience.
Definitely, maybe like a PDF file. What do you think?
I think we can check it and then make it available for everyone who's interested. Awesome,
definitely.
Great.
Something like that, yes.
Yes.
Definitely.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I think, right, and that's also comes maybe with a bit more maturity around the mentoring, that you're more and more clear about your role as a mentor yourself, right? It's you're like investing your time, and as mentioned before, right, you're not supposed to solve the problems of your mentees for them, but you want to give them the tools and the kind of recommendations at hand such that they can solve their own problems. And that is the more, say, also or substantial advice in the end, right? And I think it's also important that you kind of also stay somewhat in control of where you're guiding the mentee, right? So you don't want to just go with the flow, but you as the mentor should also have this kind of goal that you've discussed in the beginning in mind, right? And steer the whole mentoring with maybe multiple sessions towards that goal.
Yes, definitely. I totally agree with that.
Why are you actually a mentor, Kate? What was the reason for you to get into data science mentoring?
I guess that I've told you about that story already, but kind of like 3 months ago. What I personally think is that getting into the data science position is not an easy task to have. So you can get easily to the data analytics or data engineering position, but not to the data science position as well. And I think because it's my kind of a little bit personal trauma, because I remember how I was kind of beating a lot. I was like fighting a lot to get to the actual data science position. Just like not the thing that like, you know, call data science and you have Power BI reports, but the actual data science position, which is matching with the title and the job description. And that is the reason why I started doing the coaches, because like the coaching, because I really would love to have such things when I was back in the university. Because in the university, they tell you that like a lot of kind of theoretical stuff, but you would not have the implementation. And nobody will teach you. Nobody will teach you about like soft skills. Nobody will give you how to actually hack the interviews, because I think that in the data science, you actually have to, it's not hints, it's like hacking interviews. It is, yeah.
Very much related to our tech world, though, the hacking part.
Yeah, the hacking part, yes. And this is something that I really feel that I can help people being in the university to avoid the same path that I had to take in the days, and like to really help them to get into data plan position like actually.
Yeah.
Or What about you?
That's really nice. Honestly, quite similar. And I have the feeling that, you know, a lot of mentors in general, but also, of course, then in specifically in data science, have this kind of trajectory of wanting to, you know, to make a positive impact on someone else's life. And for me, it was kind of a similar feeling that I would have loved to have access to someone, you know, to mentor earlier on. And, you know, just trying to be the person for the next generation. And I mean, when I started with data science mentoring, I was still myself in my master's studies, but I've basically at that point then mentored students who just started with the bachelor's, right? So there was a, of course, there should also be a bit of like a experience or knowledge gap between mentors and mentees. And then I just grew a bit and at some point then just started mentoring career starters in data science. But basically also a lot of people who would like to change, you know, their profession into data science from, you know, maybe doing something with tourism before. And of course, this is like an even harder challenge then. And I think that, that leads me to one other learning that I wanted to share, which is you as a mentor, you should always consider the kind of individual circumstances of your mentee.
Yes.
And then also see what's realistic for them, right? Because you want to give them also a realistic recommendation. So for example, if you're, I have this case, I was mentoring like a mother who raised her kid alone, had to support themselves financially alone. And of course, for her, it was not possible, for example, to do a full-time master without working next to that, right? And so we tried to figure out how she could break into data science, but maybe with a bit of longer path, but then being able to, you know, financially sustain herself and her kid. And I think that's why, you know, mentoring is not a one-size-fits-all. That's why you do mentoring, because otherwise, I mean, people could also turn to books or, you know,
courses.
Yeah,
whatever
exactly.
It is. Yeah, because it is too average, kind of, too general for them. And that is why they want to have kind of this unique experience with a coach.
Yeah,
it is true. But like, you know, also what I thought in this kind of situations, because I know that you are doing a lot of assignments, and I guess it's like the next.
Well, I give a lot of assignments, yes.
Yes, like to them. Yes, I also kind of a little bit enjoy this kind of feature that we have. And this, for example, in this situation that you have just described, what was that of the assignments? Because I think I can imagine that it was pretty hard for her to follow that.
Yeah. So first off, like we like also already starting with the actual sessions and calls that we have, I was trying to be way more flexible with, you know, the timing of the sessions than maybe how I was with other coachings before. So we just, you know, timed the sessions to whenever she had time to just focus on herself. Maybe her kid was asleep, you know, or was still in kindergarten. And so that was the first point. But then also, of course, with the assignments, so we just took everything a bit slower than maybe with other mentees, because she just needed to have a bit more time to get them done, right? And for me, that was fully okay, right? And that's why it's always an individual case. But yeah, you know, I especially this coaching, it really, you know, still is very good, very well, you know, ingrained in my brain, because I was really inspired by my mentee, because, you know, she had so much going on and she still found the motivation and the enthusiasm to wanting to break into data science and put in the work, because it is quite a lot of work, as you said, right, Kate? It's not just, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. So
yeah,
that's also like I took a lot out of just mentoring myself as well.
I think it is one of the best, not consequences, but side effects after the mentorship, that you got a lot of positive emotions for every single session, the mentee. You know, also in basics, the assignments. What kind of assignments? Like, if she interesting data sets for them, which are not the same as, you know, in the universities. Because, like, for example, yesterday we just had a top read a different data scientist. And we've discussed that in the universities, you pretty much got used to the iris data sets. Then we have diamonds, wine data set, I guess.
And the house price.
Houses, the pricing one. That was always able to mention, yes. And I feel that it's actually not, it's not a real life examples.
Yeah,
but do you have any interesting data sets that you suggest them? If you can add a number.
Yeah, so usually I suggest, I mean, it kind of depends of where the mentees are, right? So if their main struggle right now is, you know, maybe to get better first with Python or R, I usually refer to them pages or platforms such as HackerRank or LeetCode to solve small, you know, programming-based questions and problems first. But if we're really talking about, like, you know, also maybe building up your own data science portfolio, I usually recommend to work as much as you can with real-world data. And the platform I love for that is, for example, Kaggle, because there you can also find, you know, I don't know, challenges from big companies, such as here in Germany, for example, Otto. I think they had like a multi-objective recommendation challenge a couple of months back. And I feel something like that is, you know, helping a lot to get a bit more exposure to real life. And of course, on the other side, if you can do internships, working student positions in data science and companies, I think that that actually helps a lot to get, you know, beyond the university problems.
Yes, definitely. And maybe, like, I will just add to this. One time I had a coachee, and he was in the data engineering position, wanted to have to the data science position. And he thought that big data sets, it is something that would have like 48 columns, like 48 features with a data frame. And afterwards, I started suggesting pretty much to every single coachee, I don't know if you've heard of this pretty interesting data sets. It is called RNA Cancer Gene Dataset from Kaggle. So that is pretty awesome. It is kind of a classification task. And you would have in there something like up to 22,000 of different features.
Wow. Okay.
Wow. That is nice. Like, it is really, we get into this kind of dimensionality problem, yes?
Yes.
And you would have just 800 of samples.
So that's where you can really practice feature selection.
A lot.
Awesome. Let's take a look at it right after our podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe this is something that we can have, you know, and cut off a second PDF file, I would say. Should be only like link it in about the most interesting data sets as a kind of healthy.
Oh, yes, we can do a ranking. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, awesome. We can do that. Now,
cool. And I think that is the perfect wrap up. So we have our next task, Kate. It was really nice conversation with you. And I think that wraps up our first episode. Thanks for listening in. And you can also watch us on YouTube, on our YouTube channel there. Just look for Diaries of a Data Scientist, or in short, DOTS. And yeah, see you and hear you in our next episode then.
Yes. Thank you, Astrid. And bye-bye.